Chapter 24. A Change of Schedule. Thou, through thy commandments, hast made me wiser than mine enemies, for they are ever with me. Psalms 19:05. The day following Sybil Wilbur's visit, May 22nd, Alfred Farlow wrote to Gilbert Carpenter, "Mrs. O'Brien was just in. I think she is the happiest woman on the earth. She was altogether overcome by her interview with Mrs. Eddy, and thinks she is the most wonderful woman she ever saw." Mrs. Eddy was very pleased with Mrs. O'Brien and sent the following card to the Boston Herald. A card. "My recent interview of a few moments with Sybil Wilbur of the Boston Herald was prolific. I confess to having yielded reluctantly to meet the occasion for quieting the billows of public opinion, while constantly signaling it as to my course and hoped for haven. But what a grand, calm call was hers! What a short time it took for us to talk when touched by the truth of an honest purpose. By speaking less and feeling more, we parted reciprocally blessed. Will Miss Wilbur accept my thanks for her kind courtesy, for leaving me with not one hour less in which to put my might with hers into the vast treasure troves of eternity, to draw the interest on deposits gained from minutes, till we receive the principal whereof God keeps account. May she, because of her goodness, broaden her wide range of usefulness, and I work on to widen mine into paths of peace, till the burden and heat of the day are done, the eventide is past, and bird and blossom awake in the sunshine. Mary Baker Eddy." May 24th, 1905. This card was published in the Boston Herald when Miss Wilbur's interview appeared 2 or 3 weeks later. One reporter was reporting the truth, but it was quite obvious that others were embarked upon collecting slanderous and false testimony. Several months earlier, rumor had reached Alfred Farlow that S.S. McClure, owner of McClure's Magazine and McClure Syndicate, was planning a muckraking campaign against Mrs. Eddy and Christian Science. Farlow had written to Kinter that the journalist, Mrs. Georgine Millmine Wells, with whom he had had pleasant dealings in the past, had been turned against Mrs. Eddy. In May, while Mr. Farlow was concerned about McClure's Magazine, the leader was busy with the many aspects of her church. A short message to the May primary class of the Board of Education, Miscellany, page 254, was written on May 6th. In the Sentinel of May 6th, she published an amended bylaw. Article 28. Presently Article 23. The Mother Church and Branch Churches. Local Self-Government. Section 1. The First Church of Christ Scientist in Boston, Mass., shall assume no general official control of other churches of this denomination, and it shall be officially controlled by no other church. This is the denominational rule of Christian Science. Each Church of Christ Scientist shall have its own form of government. The big board enclosure behind the Little Mother Church in Back Bay, Boston, was beginning to draw interest and attention. It was also beginning to draw fire from the enemy, and as usual, Mrs. Eddy was the prime target. When such attacks caused her severe physical pain, she called upon the mental workers in her home to help her, and she expected to receive immediate help from them, even as all did from her treatment. At times, her students were able to help her. On one occasion, several years earlier, when all in the house had failed, they called A.E. Baker to Pleasant View. Mrs. Eddy opened Science and Health and read three paragraphs which helped her, beginning page 312, line 14, and asked Dr. Baker to read them. He called her attention to the last two lines. Therefore, God, even thy God, hath anointed thee with the oil of gladness above thy fellows. He then told her of his interest in the last chapter of 2 Thessalonians, which she read and then immediately exclaimed, quote, I have got back my God, end quote. She was relieved and rested on that occasion. But on many occasions, the fear of inadequacy in the thoughts of her students eclipsed the help they were trying to give, and the leader was obliged to do all her own work. This was no doubt the reason for the paragraph she sent to her directors in May 1905 to be added to the next edition of Science and Health. The paragraph she had so recently referred Sybil Wilbur to on page 464 immediately precedes this new paragraph, also on page 464. If from an injury or from any cause, a Christian Scientist were seized with pain so violent that he could not treat himself mentally, and the scientists had failed to relieve him, the sufferer could call a surgeon who would give him a hypodermic injection. Then, when the belief of pain was lulled, he could handle his own case mentally. Thus it is that we, quote, prove all things and hold fast that which is good, end quote. The position of this paragraph, sandwiched between two paragraphs of the founder's experience, tells us that it was an expedient of her experience and not a part of the practice of Christian Science. She was leaving a complete account of all her footsteps for the guidance of her children. We have no record that she did call a surgeon for a hypodermic injection in May of 1905. But we can conjecture that she suffered pain so violent that it caused her to provide this expedient for any of her followers who found themselves in such an extreme situation. But the true practice of Christian Science is instantaneous healing, which the leader reiterated to Mrs. Stetson in her letter of May 25th. Darling, I have little time to write my best beloved even. I was delighted that you were called to bind up the brokenhearted. But oh, what an opportunity for honoring our cause by healing the man. What I need for help in my life labor more than all else on earth is a healer such as I were when practicing. I beg and pray that you become that. Yes, I would resign the readership for 3 years, and this will give you a much better chance to gain that one point, an instantaneous healer of all manner of diseases. I was that, and you should be. Our great master was that, and called upon his followers to do likewise. You can be this, and must be, in order to be a Christian Scientist. Now address yourself to this duty of yours. Watch, pray, labor, and have faith. Know that you can be what God demands you to be, and now are. his image and likeness, reflecting God, the one and only healer, reflecting good, life, truth, love. Lovingly yours, M.B. Eddy. The leader's message to Lewis Strang 2 days later again stresses the importance of healing above all else. One mind demonstrated handles serpents, casts out demons of sense with power of truth. When will Christian Scientists learn that Blab never made a single demonstration in building up this cause? How Mother longs, prays, hopes for healing in truth and love. If all scientists would strive above all else to be instantaneous healers, the attacks of the enemy would be met and mastered. But as it was, under attack, the leader was left virtually alone to meet the deadly blows of malicious animal magnetism against her life and her cause. Her life was hid with Christ in God, but her cause suffered a severe blow in May with the sudden death of Mr. E. Noyes Whitcomb, builder of the Mother Church Extension. It is recorded in Collectania that, quote, Mrs. Eddy was indignant when she learned that the Whitcomb family had worked for their father 3 days after he had passed on to bring him back. She said, "What? You kept that dear man in the vestibule 3 days?" End quote. The June Journal said of Mr. Whitcomb, "Our leader has spoken of him as, quote, one of the noblest, most lovely, and best of men," end quote. He first became known to Christian Scientists in 1894 through his work as one of the contractors for the Mother Church edifice, then in course of erection, but he has become most widely known to them as builder of the church in Concord and as builder of the new edifice, now in course of construction, for the Mother Church in Boston. Mr. Whitcomb was elected an executive member December 28, 1901. Joseph Armstrong may have been unconscious of the subtle fear that took lodgment in his thought, but it did not escape detection by the leader. Following a subsequent visit, Mrs. Eddy wrote to Joseph, quote, "I read in your mind what startled me. You must meet and break the spell of malicious animal magnetism to ruin you, and you can," end quote. Her letter caused Mr. Armstrong concern, which caused her to write him again 2 days later that she was sorry if I gave you a single unnecessary care for yourself. But since the death of Mr. Whitcomb, when I see the image of an evil one in the mind of anyone, it startles me. But this should not alarm you. Because you have met and mastered this before, you can again and always can, for God is all, and there is no other mind. Joseph Armstrong's care, as was that of the other directors, was almost totally absorbed by the building of the church in Boston. The original plan had called for completion of the extension of the Mother Church in June 1907, but the magnitude of the plans of the enemy in opposition to this visible progress caused the leader to alter her strategy. She asked her directors to dedicate the extension in June 1906, that is, to complete the building a year sooner than originally called for. When the directors consulted with the architect and builder, they were told that was an absolute impossibility. They next consulted other eminent men in the building profession, only to hear the same verdict, that their request was humanly impossible. At this point, the directors ceased asking for human opinions and turned to God. Their directions came from God's messenger to this age, and if she required it, it was possible of achievement. Their work was to break mortal minds' resistance to the accomplishment in their own consciousness. Soon after they began working rightly, the builder said that he thought it might be done. The architect's chief assistant was directing the work, and he too soon conceded that it was possible. But the architect was adamant and unyielding. Mr. Charles Brigham was a fine architect who had produced a magnificent plan for the extension, but he was not a Christian Scientist and could not remove the limitation from his thought. He was also suffering from illness, and his physician ordered him to take a trip to the Bermuda Islands for his health about this time, which left his assistant in complete charge. From then on, the speed of progress on the building increased, but there still remained 2 years' work to be accomplished in 1 year of time. A second step the leader took was published as a notice from the board of directors in the Sentinel of May 27th. In view of the fact that a general attendance of the members of the Mother Church at the communion and annual meeting in Boston entails the expenditure of a large amount of money, and the further fact that it is important that the building fund of the Mother Church should be completed as early as possible, it has been decided to omit this year the usual large gathering in Boston, and to ask the members to contribute to the building fund the amount which they would have expended in such an event. The time this move saved was far more important in the leader's eyes than was the money consideration, but mortal mind tends to measure everything in terms of dollars and cents. Another step the leader took at this time in 1905 was to awaken students to the mental methods employed by the enemy. She had her secretary, Gilbert Carpenter, write to Mr. Johnson's son, William Lyman, to make a research into mediumship, clairvoyance, animal magnetism, and modern hypnotism. This he did in the Boston Public Library and the Boston Medical Library, working evenings after closing hours in the clerk's office in the Mother Church. When he wrote his extensive findings to Mrs. Eddy, she had Mr. Carpenter write her thanks and, quote, well done, end quote, to young Mr. Johnson. It was June 11th when Sybil Wilbur's article appeared in the Boston Herald. I have seen Mrs. Mary Baker G. Eddy. Mrs. Eddy is alive and well. The secret of Pleasant View is no secret at all. Mrs. Eddy spoke in a voice which had the sweetness of a silver chime about it. There was force and decision in every word so gently uttered. The force was like a command from a mind accustomed to be obeyed. My last glimpse of her was as she stood there, erect as youth, dominating in expression, and yet gentle, flower-like, and very lovable. Her last gesture was a wave of her uplifted hand. I left with her secretaries the outline of an interview, which Mrs. Eddy agrees to look over at her leisure. Miss Wilbur's article closed with her list of questions, each followed by Mrs. Eddy's answer, which to many were simply either yes or no. When republished in the Sentinel of June 17th, the article was followed by this note. Nota bene. Miss Wilbur's courteous and correct explanation of the so-called secret of my isolation from the world leaves one feature, and the main one, to be mentioned. My seclusion is not at all on account of my age, but solely from lack of time in which to accomplish what I do for humanity and have the moments left in which to regale myself with the sweet intercourse of society. My first and forever message is one and eternal, and I shall reiterate it this year, next year, and so forth. Mary Baker Eddy, June 16th, 1905.